As good advice, leave your dial on monitor and you'll hear all sorts of interesting and entertaining things. For one, Joe Gagliola will be along in just a few moments with a look at the surprising success of a small athlete in a Giants game. For another, we've got music for you like this oldie by The Loving Spoonful. And the year of this, friends, I'll give you again, is 1965. I remember the song because their very first appearance on stage was with me at the old Brooklyn Fox Theater in Brooklyn. I speak of The Loving Spoonful, John Sebastian and company with Do You Believe in Magic? I believe in magic, and that's The Loving Spoonful. And next, Monitor Sports with Joe Gagliola, the story of a pro basketballer who's looked up to by other players even though they look down on him. I think that comes out right. Anyhow, here's Joe.
The National Basketball Association manages to come up with some outstanding rookies every year. This year, however, they really may have hit the jackpot. They've come up with a guy who the fans cheer for, even when his team is on the road. The player's name is Calvin Murphy, and last year he was an All-American at Niagara University. This year he's breaking into the pro ranks with the San Diego Rockets, and he looks like he's going to be a great big success. If he is, it'll be one of the few things about Calvin Murphy that can be called big. Even in the backcourts of the NBA, players usually stand about 6'4 or 6'5. Calvin Murphy is 5'9", and that's precisely why the fans out of town cheer for him. When Murphy comes on the court, he looks like one of the people in that television series, The Land of the Giants. People root for him because they feel that he's overmatched. And after a while, they realize not only he isn't overmatched, but he's a genuine threat. And even so, they can't help rooting for him. Despite his size, Murphy is paid, and paid well, to put basketballs through baskets. And it's something he's very good at. He's just not tall enough to be very effective defensively, so he has to make the most of the talent he has. The New York Knicks' Walt Frazier says, "He's so fast, it's difficult to defend against him. If you give him room, he shoots. And if you play him tight, he drives." This was said after Frazier and his teammates had learned the hard way about Calvin Murphy. Although the Knicks won the game, Murphy scored 23 points. And when somebody asked Frazier if he had ever played against a guy that small, Frazier said, "Not since grade school." The players are learning to respect the little guy. His coach, Alex Hannum, has already learned. Hannum says Murphy has got character, strength, and determination. And that's why a guy 5'9 will make it in the NBA. He's got real courage. But while players and coaches learn about him, the fans already love Calvin Murphy. Murphy says, I feel the average fan identifies with me because of my size. The average kid feels out of it. And then Murphy grins and says, in fact, I feel out of it. One reporter wondered if maybe Murphy could come up with another reason why the fans seem to like him so much. And Calvin said, well, maybe because I'm a nice guy. With answers like that, and standing only 5'9", it looks like the NBA has a brand new star named Calvin Murphy. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
That's Joe, a little blast from the present, as it were. And when some guy fouls Calvin Murphy, the little guy laughs right in his belt buckle. Hey, Joe G. will be back tomorrow with more Monitor Sports. And here's a young lady who's, I think she's 17 now. Her name is Karen Wyman. Her song is I Don't Know How to Love Him. And for you folks in Washington, she'll be coming to Washington, D.C. next week. You'll be able to catch Karen in person.
I don't know how to love, what to do, how to move me. I've been changed, yes, really changed, in the past few days when I have seen myself, I see.
It's 17 minutes after the hour, and you're on the Monitor Beacon.
Hi, I'm David Tanner. I've got 1 minute to talk about the Samaritan Halfway Society, Father Pete Capley, his staff, drug addiction, and you and me. The society is actually the work efforts of Father Pitt and his staff. It is an agency designed to combat drug addiction. The Society operates two 24-hour-a-day therapeutic communities, day and evening programs, and 2 3-day-a-week induction centers. New York harbors far more drug addicts than the 400 involved in treatment at the Samaritan Halfway Society, and money is needed in order to provide new facilities to treat them. That's where you and I come into the picture. If you'd like to help, contact the Samaritan Halfway Society, Incorporated, 13015 89th Road, Richmond Hill, New York. Thank you.
Happy Day Radio 66, WNBC, New York.
We keep our eyes on the world, so keep your ears on NBC.
Again, Murray the K here for the Big M, Monitor 70. In a few moments, we'll hear some comments from NBC newsman Peter Hackus on efforts to clean up our environment and the effect these efforts may have had on last week's election results. First, we've got some Monitor music. Good friend of mine, and I know a delightful chap. For those of you who have met him, his name is Neil Diamond. And a song called Do It, so we'll do it to it. National concern over the state of our environment just may have had some influence on the outcome of last week's elections, as we hear now from NBC News correspondent Peter Hackus.
The voters have spoken, and the language they used last Tuesday adds up to well over $1 billion worth of new sewers, new sewage treatment plants, new recreation areas and wildlife preserves, anti-air pollution devices, and in Maine, a fund for cleaning up oil spills. On the debit side of the ecology questions, Rhode Island voters rejected a new sewer system, Massachusetts turned down special land use taxes, and voters in the state of Washington rejected a ban on non-returnable drink cans and bottles. But it was a start, particularly in Illinois, where $750 million in anti-pollution bonds were approved. In California, Alaska, Florida, Nevada, Nebraska, Oregon, Maine, and Washington, where voters okayed environmental questions, and in Rhode Island and Virginia, where voters approved amendments to state constitutions, declaring a so-called environmental bill of rights. Such amendments don't cost anything, and they serve as legal underpinning for citizens who file court suits against polluters. Just how much the ecology situation affected voting for certain candidates is, of course, a fuzzy matter. There are those who say that it may have had a considerable effect on the California and Illinois elections, in which Democrats Tunney and Stevenson made a major environmental pitch, and where voters may have been dissatisfied with the anti-pollution efforts made by Republican incumbents Murphy and Smith. Hundreds of candidates took firm stands, pledging that an environmental cleanup would be among their first order of business if elected. Well, now they are elected, to Congress, state legislatures, governorships, and to county and local offices. It would be well for the rest of us, through letters and other contacts, to remind those office holders and to keep reminding them that the folks back home expect to see them keep those anti-pollution promises. Peter Hackus, NBC News, Washington.
The big question, of course, is whether we're ruining some parts of our environment faster than we're cleaning up the other parts. Some people have different questions on it.
Are we ruining the environment? Is industry contributing to it? Industry answers by saying the following. To all of you out there, they say,
we've only just begun.
I thought you'd never answer.
To live, white lace and promises, a kiss black and white.
Just begun, and that, of course, the Carpenters. Now, a message on behalf of Religion in Life and the Advertising Council. Computers are changing our lives, often for the better, but sometimes you feel more like a punch card than a person. Now, what can you do to get back in touch with people? You can start caring about people, all people. They need you, and you need them. Start today. Love your neighbor. It's not easy, but then nothing worthwhile is.
Thank you.
Yolanda Pasa, the garden variety on Monitor 70, heard all over the USA, border to border and coast to coast. In southeastern Maine, our friends hear us on station WRDO Augusta, serving Kennebec County. We'll pause briefly for a word from all our NBC affiliates, and then we'll be back. I'm Murray the K.
Second Sunday, what happened at the polls? This is Dean Mell inviting you to join me for another edition of this award-winning news series tomorrow night on NBC Radio.
One of the big stars in the low-price field, friends. And in this half hour, we're going to hear from the author of a fascinating new book about the legal rights of people under the age of 21. But before we get to that, let's get deeper and deeper into some music from Frida Payne. If I didn't play this by Frida Payne, it would hurt her. You get notice how that, oh, that hurt me.
Thank you.
Did you know that until recently, a hardened criminal had more constitutional rights than a minor in trouble? Well, these included the right to be represented by a lawyer, have a jury trial, to refuse to answer questions, and to be given written notice of the charges against them. Some of this is changing in some places, but the situation is still confused, and to help clarify it, today's guest has written a book called Up Against the Law, The Legal Rights of People Under 21. So let's meet the author now and welcome her to Monitor, Jean Strauss. Jean, how are you?
Fine, thanks, Ray.
I'd like you to tell me why you wrote this book in the first place.
Well, I've just seen kids getting messed up by the law all over the place in relation to drugs, in relation to their rights in court, the draft, their parents, contracts, and I just thought that it would be a good idea to put all this together in one place where kids could read it and know about it.
And what main subjects do you cover in the book, for example?
Students' rights, parents, drugs, sex, the draft, contracts, and a number of other areas.
Let's run the gamut.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, do you find that they're beginning to want to learn their rights, to know what they can do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I talked with lots of kids when I was writing this book and lots of lawyers, and it's an enormous problem, and kids really want to know. The hardest thing about it is that it's different for every state. It's different very often in different areas of different states, and only a lawyer can really tell you in a given situation what your rights are, because everything's so complicated and depends on real little details of the situation. So it's very hard to say, 1, 2, 3, 4, these are what your rights are. But absolutely, kids do want to know it.
Would you recommend that instead of just the usual lawyer who practices, you know, general law, is there a group of lawyers who specialize in juvenile cases?
There are beginning to be those kinds of lawyers, and there are some organizations that are listed in the back of my book, by the way, that specialize in handling cases dealing with kids. There's a place called the Youth Law Center in San Francisco that's great, and they're all over the country. They're sprouting up in reaction to this need.
Well, the need seems to stem mostly from kids, say, between 16 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
I think that age bracket where they're not yet of age, but they have...
It's in between,
The 16 to 20 age.
Yeah. And we do tend to keep kids much too long in this society. You know, we sort of give them all the accoutrements of being grown-ups, but at the same time they don't have any of the rights, and that creates an untenable situation.
It has nothing at all to do with the law, but they seem to want to break the law for some reason or other. We're living in a society where the children have more than they've ever had in the history of the world, and yet they want to change that.
Right. Well, material goods don't really have much to do with morality or the quality of life, and those are the questions the kids are really asking about. And they see that things aren't really like they were told they were going to be. And they're really living out the things that their parents just talked about, and that creates a lot of problems.
You know, Jean, this is such an important subject. I'd like to get some more information from you, but will you stay on for just a little while?
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Okay. Now, I must remind you all that you are on the Monitor Beacon.
This is Patrolman Jesse Peterman of the New York City Police Department. What's wrong with trying heroin just once? After all, you can't get addicted on just one shot. Well, it is true that a person will not become physically addicted on just one shot, but that doesn't tell the whole story. First, heroin is an unpredictable drug. It can kill without warning, and we don't fully understand why. In many cases, death is sudden, completely without warning. But this is not the only reason for not trying heroin just once. Usually, the addict uses a dirty needle, unsterilized, which carries a variety of disease germs. Finally, remember this. The single biggest cause of death in New York City for those between the ages of 14 and 35 is drug abuse. This was a reminder from your Community Relations Division of the New York City Police Department.
Happy Day Radio 66, WNBC, New York.
Back with Monitor, I'm Murray Decay, and let's continue our conversation with Jean Strauss about the legal rights of minors. Jean, at the front of your book, you pose a series of problems for teenagers, followed by the question, what would you do? So let's get your answers to some of them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For example, suppose a high school student is taken to the principal's office, and he's expelled f- for wearing a black armband for, like, to protest the war, what would he do?
He could... The principal cannot legally expel him for that, and he should find a lawyer and take action to get himself put back in school. And in 1969, the Supreme Court ruled specifically in a case just like that, that the principal did not have the right to restrict the free speech of students in the school, and wearing an armband to protest against the war would be an element of free speech.
Okay. The next problem. A cop stops you on the street, frisks you, finds a joint. And for those people who are not don't know what a joint is, it's a marijuana cigarette, and hauls you off to jail. Now, what's your move?
Well, that's complicated. A cop can't legally frisk you unless he thinks he has good reason to believe that you're dangerous to him. If, in fact, he did have that, eventually he could prove in the court that he could have searched you. If he didn't have that proof, he has no right to search you, and that's what you have to work out with your lawyer afterwards. The first thing you should do is call a lawyer. Remember everything the cop did, remember everything you did and said, and the lawyer will have to work it out.
And what are the penalties for possession and sale?
Well, it varies from state to state. In some places, if they find a grain of grass in your coat pocket, they can convict you. In California, I think there was a law that if they found stems and seeds in a garbage can in your backyard, they could convict you for possession. In other places, it's not quite so easy to put you away for it.
Okay. The laws, I know, are not the same in each state. Are they changing across the country?
Yeah, they're going in both directions. Some states are really toughening up, and others are getting more reasonable and more realistic and making marijuana separate from hard drugs. And some even have separate classifications for hallucinatory drugs like LSD that aren't marijuana or hard drugs. New Jersey, for instance, recently just separated those out and made the penalties for marijuana much lighter than they had been, and there's a big storm continually going on about this in Congress.
Now, it's they're really cracking down on the sale.
Yeah, right.
People who sell marijuana.
Right.
As opposed to possession, is that correct?
Yeah, there are different crimes right in New York State right now about that. Sale is worse, sale to a minor is even worse than that. But possession is just about the least. Use is a crime in some states and not in others. And a kid I heard of last week had taken a bad acid trip and went to the hospital. The hospital called the cops. The cops egged him on by saying they would give him some Thorazine to bring him down if he would tell where he'd gotten the drugs. And he said, no, he wouldn't do that. And, you know, he was really freaking out. And they kept going, and they said, if you don't tell us, we'll charge you with internal possession. Well, there's no such crime as internal possession, but the kid didn't know that, and so he told them. So that's the kind of craziness that goes on.
I see. Another situation. Let's say that a teenager's parents split up, and the teenager loves the father, hates the mother, but the court awards him to the mother. What can the teenager do about that?
In most situations, you can't do anything about that. The court makes a full investigation and find out about your parents and you, and they'll award you to the one that they think you should go to. I think in Ohio, the kid does have some say about which parent he goes to, but in most states, he doesn't. After a while, if things are really bad, you can ask to have the court reopen the case, and in that case, you'll need somebody, a lawyer or another legal guardian, to act for you, because as a minor, you can't take any legal action by yourself. But you can have the case reopened eventually and investigated if you want to.
All right, we've got time for one more problem. You're an unmarried girl who's had a baby, and you're told that you can't complete your education. Is that true or false?
False. And don't let anybody tell you it isn't. You may need a lawyer to get back to school, but they can't keep you out because you've had a baby.
Or even...
I mean, just for that reason.
What happens while you're pregnant?
While you're pregnant, that depends. Various states have various laws about that. They can make you stay out, particularly if you're not married, for the duration of your pregnancy. But there's no way, I think, that they can keep you out afterwards.
I see. Okay, the rights of minors are not protected as well as they should be, but do you foresee the day when minors will have greatly increased rights under the law?
Well, I like to think that. It's going in the direction of opening up, because kids have started asking these questions and are putting on a lot of pressure for changes in the law, just like women have and black people have over the past few years. And I can only hope that it'll open up, because I think we're headed for a very bad situation if it doesn't.
Well, Gene, we want to thank you. First, I want to ask you, how old are you? You're not...
25.
Okay.
Right.
We want to thank you for being with us today on Monitor. We've been talking with Gene Strauss, author of the new book Up Against the Law, The Legal Right of People Under 21. It's in a paperback, and I recommend it. If you're under 21, you need all the help you can get. Talking backward through time, we dredge up one of the earlier hits by a recent featured guest on this show. In fact, we spent an hour with Engelbert Humperdinck just a couple of weeks ago. And of course, you remember this one, The Bicycles of Belles Eyes. Les Bicyclettes de Belles Eyes. Now, those of you who speak French properly may want to make a call about that.
To the end, to the end.
Engelbert Humperdinck, born in India under the name of Jerry Dorsey. And now this from STP.
Oh, Andy, when I see all the children going to school in the morning, well, it kind of makes me wish I were going, too.
Well, Dolly, I don't know about you going back to school, but for you, this morning means going to the studio to make more radio commercials. What are you going to tell the folks about STP this time?
Well, if they don't already know it, I'll tell everyone how STP oil treatment clings to vital engine parts, lubricates better than ordinary motor oil alone ever could.
So far, I love it.
And how important STP oil treatment is in the winter, because STP acts like antifreeze for oil. So it helps cars start easier and faster on cold mornings.
Don't stop now.
And to make sure, you add a can of STP oil treatment to help your car run smoother and quieter and longer.
Wonderful, honey. That's just wonderful. I don't know who writes your dialogue, but with lines like that, I can make you a star.
More Monitor 70. This is Murray the K, and... Thank you, Mother. Now more Monitor Music, the overture to a very successful recent experiment in rock opera, the overture to Tommy. Multitude. You're tuned to the Big M, Monitor 70, with NBC News on the Hour coming up just ahead. I'm your host, Murray the K, inviting you to stay tuned.